Welcome back to another Future Sox podcast. Clinton Cole, your host, and joining me via Skype, it is beat writer for the Chicago White Sox, WhiteSox.com, Scott Merkin. Merk, thanks for your time this morning, man. Really appreciate it.
Sure. How you doing, Clinton?
I'm doing all right. Weather here in South Bend's a little nasty. Went for a run in the rain this morning, but it's October, so I guess, you know, that's when the weather starts turning, so we can't complain too much, I guess.
The White Sox and Tigers found out a little bit about rain this past weekend. So, yeah, I think that's what happened at this point.
Before we get started, I want to ask you a question here. How long does Jim Harbaugh get a pass at Michigan?
Oh, we're gonna hit the Harbaugh category too, huh? I don't think it's a pass. I mean, let's look at it this way. Jim Harbaugh is a guy who played. He actually played there when I was there. I did not play there, but he was at Michigan during some of the time that I was there. And you know, when you're the guy who they recruit to come home as, you know, the favorite son sort of thing, they're in my opinion, they're never gonna, you know, just axe the guy. They're never gonna just fire him. And I get it. You know, you can look at it two different ways. He's had a very good record over time, but the problem is he hasn't won the games he needed to win consistently. I think he's got a couple wins against Michigan State. I know he has not beat Ohio State or their former coach, and will have a tough time doing this year because much it pains me to say Ohio State is one of the probably top four teams in the country this year. You know, I think it's somewhere in between, and what he's done there. We'll see what happens, you know, in the next coming weeks, because they have teams like Iowa, Michigan State, Penn State. And, you know, the Wisconsin game was a debacle, especially with a poor team like Northwestern doing so well against Wisconsin the weekend after in Wisconsin. So, you know, that was an utter debacle. They looked completely unprepared. They didn't play well. They beat Rutgers, obviously, you know, pretty badly. Rutgers is not only not a good team, but now has a new coach. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But I think it'll end up being, I think the only way it separates, and it very well could, is if Jim, you know, Harbaugh decides to go back to the pros or walk away at some point. But I don't think they'll ever, you know, just get rid of him, barring something completely unexpected, you know, in terms of the program.
And it's almost basketball season. You guys got a new coach.
Yeah, I just watched him before you called. I was just watching him talk from the media day. I like to hire. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, I forgot that Cassius Winston is coming back to Michigan State this year. So they're not only going to be the number one team in the Big Ten, they'll, you know, rightfully be the number one team in the country. That's another really, boy, it hurts to say this stuff, but you got to be honest, right? But, you know, that's a really good basketball team. So I'm not saying they're going to go in this year and make the Final Four, but I think they have the right guy. And I'm not even going by, you know, the quote that's been kind of so overstated since Bo Schembechler said it when Bill Frieder took another job and wanted to coach Michigan in the 89 NCAA tournament. You know, a Michigan man will coach a Michigan program. But I think there's something to be said for a guy who's got a connection to the program, who also has a great basketball mind like Howard, coming back to the program to kind of lead it. So I think he's going to do good things there, even if, you know, they're, you know, like a 7 or 8 seed this year in the tournament with some of the guys. You know, they lost Brazdeikis and Poole. And who am I missing the last one? There's one other guy that left. Matthews too. So I mean, you know, they're going to have some spots to fill. They have Wagner's brother who's there, but I think long term he's going to be a real good hire for that program.
All right, let's get to the White Sox. We're going to do a prospect recap. Yeah, and fall league is going on right now. The playoffs started last night. The playoffs, something White Sox fans don't really know much about since the last 11 years.
they may in the not too distant future, though. You know, it's interesting because I think everyone who's, you know, a pro rebuilds, you know, supporter, as we've seen, Clinton, is pretty much assumes that, you know, when the Sox are ready to win, they'll almost kind of be given like a red carpet to the playoffs. And, you know, obviously that's not happening. As the Sox rebuild and get stronger and get better and get closer to that contending window, you know, other teams are going to do the same. I don't think Houston's going anywhere. I don't think the Yankees are going anywhere. I think, you know, the Twins obviously had a record-breaking year home run-wise, so that'll probably drop a little bit. But, I mean, I think they still have some decent talent on that team. So, you know, it's going to be a fight even when they get good. I mean, look at Milwaukee. Milwaukee's done everything right. Now, granted, you know, they lost their MVP candidate, so that, you know, they deserve more credit than blame. But that's what happens. You know, sometimes you can do everything right and have a great season and get to the LCS and really have a good year and still not win the championship, which really is the ultimate prize, right? I mean, Kansas City got it, the Cubs got it, Houston got it, all going through rebuild. So, you know, there's work to be done, but I think, you know, it's not too far off. I really do think they're going to be in a position, maybe even as early as 20, but if things go well and people continue to progress that already have, the injured players come back, you know, at least a form of what they want, and then eventually get to their level. 21 should be, you know, a really interesting year and a really competitive year and possibly, you know, a playoff caliber year?
Pardon me. A couple things. First, I am definitely pro rebuild. I think this is, you know, I understand why people are negative, but it's just like, I feel like it takes a lot of energy to be negative about baseball and something that's supposed to be fun. But
I think you realize after a while that, you know, I mean, it's a great thing and it's intense and it's passionate, but you gotta have your perspective too. You know, I think that's the key thing.
The other thing is the other teams you're mentioning. Another team to mention is the Rays. I mean, they've won 90 games the last 2 years. We'll see how
they do
tonight. But I saw them here in South Bend. I saw their Kannapolis equivalent, Bowling Green, a lot. And that team, they have so much talent in that farm system, obviously led by Franco, and so many good pitchers. So they're not going anywhere. So that's just another team that that they're going to have to contend with. But yeah, so let's talk about the big three first. I know Kopech is still considered a prospect for our intents and purposes. We'll talk about him and Dunning in a second. But for the big three, Robert, Madrigal, and Vaughn, Robert did this year what I was telling everyone that he would do after seeing him last year. You know, people he hurt his finger. He's always hurt, whatever. And we didn't get a good read on him last year. But I just knew that, you know, seeing what I saw from him, that this is what it was going to be. And he showed it this year. Hitting 32 home runs and driving in 92 over his few teams, his three teams that he was with, and hit .328 in the OPS over 1,000. So, Luis Robert, what's his timetable? That's the big thing. Are they obviously there's no need for him to sign an extension like Eloy did. So, what's the timetable for him?
Well, you know, I was talking to one of the Sox media relations guys near the end of the season, and think about the difference in perspective between the end of 18 and the end of 19. You know, I mean, at the end of 18, you know, you weren't sure in Moncada with, you know, the high strikeout total and some decent numbers, but certainly not a great season. Giolito was coming off, you know, probably the worst year in baseball for a starter. I mean, by statistics, it was the worst year. Lopez had a pretty good year. You know, Abreu had played through some very, you know, strange, you know, health issues at the end of that year. And Robert had been hurt, and I don't think he had a home run his entire minor league season in 18, right? I think he had like 17 RBIs and no home runs in that year. So you really didn't know. And now flash forward to 1 year, and I mean, the theme of this year really should be what a difference a year makes, right? I mean, think about all the good things that now you can hang your hat on as a Sox fan or as the organization. You know, I mean, Moncada, Giolito, Abreu was tremendous this year. I mean, Robert, which is what we're focusing on, just had an unbelievable year. I mean, look at his numbers. You know, across the board, 31 doubles, 11 triples, 32 homers, 92 RBIs, 108 runs scored, 36 stolen bases. Yeah, you know, his strikeout to walk ratio, you can live with that, right? If the rest, you know, 129 to 28, if the rest of the numbers, you even got hit by a pitch 14 times this past year. And then, as you pointed out, Clinton, the 1.001, you know, OPS is just insane. Now, again, you know, he's not going to come to the majors most likely and duplicate that. Although, look what, you know, Yordan Alvarez did. So I guess anything is possible. But, you know, I think he is certainly a centerpiece of that rebuild. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this offseason is a big one for him and depends. I know, I understand the whole contractual control issue and everything else, but if I'm the White Sox and, you know, you add 3-4 key pieces and really make this team strong, you know, start opening day with Robert. I know that kind of flies in the face of not calling him up this year, but really, again, people will laugh at this. I mean, you could make a case for the fact that, you know, by September, he had gone through a bunch of different levels and played a lot of baseball, and there really probably wasn't – you can make a case for not calling him. I thought he should have been up before September. I would have called him up in August and let him have 2 months to get ready for the next season. I think Madrigal could have done the same, even though Madrigal's at a little different level than Robert. But, yeah, I would have him up at the beginning of the year, now whether that happens or not. But one way or the other, the bulk of his work, as in, like, you know, more than the bulk, as in most of his work, will be at the major league level in 2020, barring, again, the weird, you know, unexpected situation.
With Luis Robert, you're talking about some of the other players that you're done on Alvarez. You look at what Ronald Acuna Jr. has done, you know, Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, he hit, what, 53, 54 home runs this year, his first year.
Right.
Is
rookie
that
record, right?
Yeah, yeah. It broke Judge's record from, what, 2 years ago, whatever, with 52 or whatever the numbers were, but over 50. Do you think the recent success of these young guys, there's going to be, I don't know about pressure on Robert, but, you know, White Sox fans are going to want him to do that right off the bat? I mean, do you see something like he could possibly do those things?
Well, I mean, I think any team wants their guy to come up and do that, right? Even if it's, you know, a mid-level prospect in terms of what we consider a mid-level prospect. But yeah, I think, you know, there is precedent set on guys coming, you know, guys coming up like Alvarez and Alonso and Soto and doing it right away. But there's also guys who have come up and, you know, had to go back down again for that matter, you know, and then came back and did a great job. So, of course, there'll be pressure, and I don't think he's going to feel it. You know, it's funny, we asked Tim Anderson about that at the end of the year, about pressure, you know, leading the batting title race for what, like the last 3 weeks or month or something, like at least the last 3 weeks. And he said, no, he didn't feel any pressure. Maybe, you know, it's a little different for them, or maybe he was just BSing us, one of the two. But, you know, Robert, it doesn't seem like he's a guy who is overcome by pressure. He seems like a real laid back dude who's just ready to go and has amazing talent. And I think he's going to be really good, whether that happens, you know, in April, whether that happens in July, whether that happens in 2021. You know, I mean, it's, and I'm not saying like he's going to go out and play next year and hit 190. What I'm saying is I think he has superstar in the makings on him. And whether that happens the day he steps on the field, or it takes a month or takes 6 months, you know, to get to that level, he's going to be there. So, yeah, I mean, there are certainly some cases you can give that say, well, geez, you know, these guys hit the ground running and look at how great they are. And look at Jimenez, you know, I mean, Jimenez, you deal with things that you don't totally expect. You know, he ran into the wall. He collided with Charlie Tilson. You know, he had a little bit of a hip thing, and it threw off his timing. And when his timing was on, he was great. You know, he was tremendous. He was the rookie of the month in September, you know, after he found his timing. So there's things you don't even account for. Sure, there's pressure, but I think Robert will have zero issue handling that kind of pressure.
And the other thing with Aloy, you know, towards the beginning of the season, the death of his grandmother, too, that took time away and his focus away, too. So many things with Aloy this year that, you know, he still hit, what, 31 home runs, and I feel like he didn't even play, I'm exaggerating, but I feel like he didn't even play half a season, you know, so.
Right. Well, I think that the thing is by him is, like, you don't even look at the total number of games he played, you look at the time it took him to get back to form once he came back, you know. And then as Rick Hahn and Rick Renteria pointed out a number of times, and I think even Todd Steverson, the hitting coach, mentioned this too, you know, they pitched him at the beginning of the year like a 10-year veteran, you know. I mean, they were throwing a lot of off-speed out of the zone, and he had to prove to them that he could lay off those pitches and not chase, and then, you know, sit on the pitch he wanted. And once he did, I'll tell you, I mean, the guy's got, you know, light tower power. And you know, I think even if you looked at him as the year went on, even without looking at analytics on that, and I realize, you know, you need a good balance of everything in baseball between, you know, kind of the scouts and the analytics, both are hugely valuable to, you know, building teams and analyzing players and all that. But just the eye test, you could see a better left fielder as the year went on. And that was a lot of work he put in with Darryl Boston to get to that point. There were less plays as the year went on, for lack of a better term, where you kind of looked at each other in the press box and, you know, kind of went, what the heck happened there? You know, he seemed to have a better contact, and it's important for the Sox, assuming Jose Abreu is coming back and, you know, looking at some of their possible free agent pursuits, that Aloy can play left field. You can't run a team with 5-6 DHs on it, you know, or 5-6 first baseman DHs. So it's important, at least at this stage, for Aloy to be able to be a left fielder. And, you know, I think he, to his credit, worked hard to be good. And, you know, final thing on that, Rick Renteria said a number of times that Aloy kind of bristled to him when he took him out as a defensive replacement. He does not want to be a guy who's replaced defensively. And trust me, no one has more fun at their job than Aloy. So for him to get a little, you know, put out when someone's making a move, you can tell that's a focus of him to kind of get better in a certain area.
One more note on him before we move on.
Sure.
So, you know, I saw him, I'd say 8 to 10 times last year in Charlotte. You know, I would say outside of people that work for the Sox, I think I saw, you know, the prospects more than pretty much anyone last year. I didn't get to see
you guys are all over it. Yeah, yeah. No question. You guys do a great job on that stuff.
And, you know, watching Aloy play defense, it was just like, there are times when I would just be like, what is he doing out there? Like, it's like, has he been an outfielder before? And just seeing the growth from what I saw last July, August, and early September in North Carolina to what he did, you know, like you said, towards the end of this year, it's night and day. And hopefully this offseason he can improve and, you know, just, you know, add another tool. He's never going to be a gold glove outfielder, I wouldn't imagine, but he can at least be serviceable and, you know, not be a detriment out there, I guess we could say.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think, you know, look at it. Here's a good example, and I know Sox fans don't like to go across town to look at examples, but I think Schwarber, while he still had some plays where people kind of were like, what happened there? I think Schwarber's become a pretty serviceable outfielder. Now, again, I don't think he's going to win a Gold Glove anytime soon or probably ever, but I think he's competent out there. And I think he's got a very strong throwing. I think actually he would be a good guy. He'd be a good fit on the Sox, but I don't think the Cubs are trading him. I think you could use him as a DH who plays the outfield 50, 60 times a year, right? Because he could easily do that. And again, you know, that's what you kind of need. I think that probably was one of the reasons why the Cubs traded Aloy, who is a great kid, great clubhouse guy, a great offensive force, will be elite, already is, you know, kind of in the elite stratus on that right now, but will be so. But I think they probably figured, you know, in a National League team, there may not be a spot for him with his defensive shortcomings. So to his credit, as you said, from what you saw last year, he's worked on it, you know, to the point where he's competitive now, and the Sox would probably like him to get even above that, where they can, you know, count on him a little bit in left field, even if you're going to have a guy like Robert who can cover a lot of ground in center field out there eventually.
That will definitely help out everyone. All right, Nick Madrigal, Andrew Vaughn. We'll go to Madrigal first. I know we're both in the camp of bringing both of them up in August, but is Madrigal, I mean, obviously Madrigal and Robert are different players. They're different situations, but they're both hopefully being counted on, you know, as key parts when the Sox do make the playoffs again. So what are we doing with Nick Madrigal? Does the lack of power concern you at all? Where's the timetable for him?
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting for people like us. We can make predictions and comments, like bring them up now without any kind of thought to like anything else going on, you know, that like the organization has to deal with. But I do think there were people within the Sox, you know, who thought Robert and Madrigal could have even held their own early on this season. You know, that's how advanced their skill set is. I think Madrigal more as just an overall baseball player, and Robert Moore is just kind of an amazing talent who is kind of learning the game more, you know, and not learning the game more, but just developing into a true baseball talent. I think Madrigal is probably, as Rick Hahn said in his kind of State of the Sox exit interview for the season last Friday, Madrigal's maybe a tick behind Luis Robert. So I could see him maybe, you know, a little later in the season. I mean, I can tell you this, Ricky Renteria is ready to win right now. Like, you know, if they started the season today, he'd be okay with that and wants to win and is tired of the 89, 102, 96 loss season and totally understands it's a rebuild. Totally gets that's part of the road to get to where they need to be. But I think he'd like to have him at the beginning of the season. And I don't think I'm speaking out of turn saying that. I think, you know, he's talked about, you know, how, and but again, you know, Ricky is with the team. He's with the front office. He knows what's going on, but he also understands talent. And so does the whole coaching staff. With that said, you know, I don't think the power is an issue. I think it's good to have different. I think, again, going to the other side of town, you saw a team that, you know, and the Cubs that had a lot of talent and couldn't beat you in a lot of different ways. You know, I mean, when they hit home runs, and this is just from watching them, you know, maybe 30, 40 times during the course of the year, it seems like when they hit a lot of home runs, as they did like that last Pittsburgh series when they were still in it, you know, they beat the other teams pretty convincingly. When they didn't, they didn't have a lot of options to kind of manufacture runs for whatever reason. And it's not just the Cubs. There's a lot of teams this year who were like that because the home run was obviously far and away, not only king, but like ruler for life this year, pretty much. But, I like Madrigal's skill sets. I mean, you look at his numbers from this past year, you know, again, 300 hitter across the levels, the three levels he was at, you know, 27 doubles. So there's some gap power there. And again, 35 stolen bases. And I realize the stolen base is kind of it's gone from where the league leader is now at 35 or 40 versus 75 or 80 in the past. But when you have a guy like that who can run and can make something happen like that, can manufacture home, well, that's what, you know, they did a lot in the 05 team too, while still being able to hit a ton of home runs. And I'm not saying that this team is going to come in 2020 with these additions and win the World Series, but you need those kind of players. And now granted, I know Yomer Sanchez was kind of a lightning rod for fans this year because of the fact that his, you know, his slugging was really low. You know, there's no question about it. But he also, in my mind, should be a Gold Glove finalist at second base. So I think you're not going to, the thing about Madrigal is if Yomer is, in fact, you know, not going to be the starter going forward at second base, you're not going to lose anything at all defensively. Madrigal, from everyone I've talked to, is a Gold Glove caliber second baseman. So I think he's a great fit. I think you put him and Tim Anderson together. They've already worked together in spring training. They'll work together again in this spring training. It's a great up, you know, good teams are strong up the middle. And you got Robert, Madrigal, Anderson, McCann, Collins, or whoever else you had back there. That's a pretty good up the middle, you know, task for the White Sox right there.
Let's move to Andrew Vaughn. Talking to Nick Hostetler back in June after the draft when they drafted Vaughn, and you know, a lot of the White Sox, he told me a lot of the White Sox personnel, you know, would have been fine with starting Vaughn in Birmingham because they thought he was that advanced. And then, would you be surprised, you know, depending on whatever they do in free agency, would you be surprised if Vaughn was up at, you know, if the White Sox are in the thick of things at the end of next year?
Yeah, I think what you said there in the free agency is a key part. You know, when you assume that Jose Abreu, rightfully so, is going to be back for this year and that they're going to go after a significant presence as a designated hitter, and I'm not even using the J.D. Martinez point yet because he's still a part of the Red Sox and hasn't opted out of anything yet. And, you know, there's still a process after that on top. But I would think it'd be more likely a 2021 for Vaughn. And I think the thing is, one of the great things the Sox have done during this rebuild is they, even the great talents they've had, the top prospects, and obviously everyone down there has got some level of talent or you wouldn't be playing this game, but the guys who are considered, you know, kind of the fulcrums of this rebuild, they've let them develop at their own pace and not rush them. And God knows there's been a number of opportunities over the last couple of years that, you know, to move these guys quickly from Moncada to Jimenez to Robert. And forget about contractual control. I think they've done a really good job of just letting these guys develop to allow them to stay up here and they don't have to go back down again and even play through the struggles because they know they're at that point where they can handle it. So I think, you know, you'll see that with Vaughn too. I think Vaughn is the next, you know, the next guy in that line. And again, you know, you talk about double A and it makes sense because I think the same can be said for Madrigal. There's something to be said for these guys who have not only extensive college experience, but extensive college success. They're kind of maybe ahead of the game of some of these younger guys. So I think he probably could get the job done if he was up here. But again, I think the Sox will, you know, hold with their plan they've gone with all along and that, you know, they'll let these guys develop at a steady pace and not rush them. And if, you know, as Rick Hahn has said many times, and Kenny Williams has said this too, the good ones kind of dictate when they need to be up.
Let's go to the few guys that have that missed this year, or missed most of this year with injuries. You know, Michael Kopech and Dane Dunning and Jimmy Lambert as well. But, you know, Kopech and Dunning, obviously the two bigger names. And, Lambert probably would have gotten a shot this year if he wasn't hurt as well. But so I guess with Kopech and Dunning, Kopech obviously he's had quite a year in social media and all sorts of stuff. But he's one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. And it looks like he's ready to go and, you know, ready to go for spring training. And then there's Dane Dunning a few months behind. So what can you tell us about Kopech and Dunning?
You know, I had a chance to talk. Well, we all talked to Kopech, you know, recently, and I had a chance to talk to him before that. And the same, I talked to Dunning earlier this season. And, you know, it's interesting, they both talk about how, while they didn't want to go through this, Tommy John might be the best thing for them in terms of just their baseball life and their pitching, and that it's really got them focused on what they need to do to not let this happen. And, you know, to try and prevent this from happening. And obviously, if it happens, it happens. You can't do anything about it. But they're really focused on kind of the mechanics changes and the work they have to put in, the certain exercises they have to do and the certain preparation they have to do to you know, be in good stead. And they feel it's going to help them as a pitcher. And I think if you go back to what Rick said, even at Sox Fest and then in spring training, you know, I think Dane Dunning might have been in, you know, kind of the outskirts of the picture for that fifth starter spot if he had not gotten hurt last year. Obviously, getting hurt last year and costing him whatever it was, you know, 2018 I'm talking. What he missed, like the last month and a half of the season, last 2 months of the season, something like that. That took him out of that picture. But I think if he had pitched a fully healthy 18, he might have gone into, you know, 2019 as the Sox fifth starter. So again, Kopech will pitch the bulk of his season, if not all of his season, at the major league level. Dunning is a guy who I think, you know, come July, somewhere in there, could be a guy who could help out in the rotation. Jimmy Lambert, you know, is going to be a little further behind. But, and you got a guy like Bernardo Flores who's down there. You have some options. You know, again, that shouldn't preclude them from going out and adding some veterans, because as great a rebuild as you can have, and you saw this with Houston, you saw this with the Cubs, you saw this with the Royals, you have to supplement. And the Sox know this. This is not something the Sox are going to listen to this and say, you know, geez, we didn't even think about this. Let's go add some veterans now. You know, they knew they had to finish it. But you can win with a base of young players. You can't win with young players alone. That just doesn't happen. You got to add some veterans. You got to add kind of like that seminal free agent, you know, to kind of take you over the top. Or the seminal veteran, I think. With the Cubs, it was John Lester. With the Astros, it seemed to be Justin Verlander in the trade. So, you know, they kind of, and then you supplement from that point on. And the Sox, I think, are going to start doing that this offseason and continue into the offseason going into 2021. So, you know, I think you have a great young core and a lot of guys to pick from that can work around with the veterans you add in. And I think that includes guys like Dunning and Lambert and Flores. And probably, I will tell you, I was talking to a scout, I believe he was from Washington, and he was raving about the Sox system as a whole and mentioned a couple names that really I wasn't even that familiar with, you know, kind of lower level, in the lower levels of the minors right now, who he really liked is a guy, I think he said his name was McKinley Moore, who he raved about as a possible setup guy in the future. So, you know, the scouts see this even as deep down as kind of like, you know, Kannapolis and Great Falls and that kind of thing, and they can project out guys who they see helping out. So a lot of people very impressed with what the Sox have built up so far.
I can't imagine the Ross Detweilers and the Manny Benuelas of the world would have gotten as much time in the mound as they did with, you know, Dunning and Lambert being healthy, but who knows? But anyways,
no, and you know, to those guys credit, I mean, Detweiler, it seemed like he threw every other day, you know, in the last couple of weeks of the season.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like, and I mean, how about Hector Santiago? Good
yeah,
lord,
another
guy threw 100 pitches and then came back. And again, it would have been, it was his side day, I guess. But as Ivan Nova pointed out, when he was even for an inning, so I mean, credit to those guys who, you know, are experienced veterans. You know, Ben Willis was hurt for a good portion of the year, but actually, you know, had a couple decent starts early on before he kind of fell off the grid there. But, you know, Detweiler and Santiago really took the ball down the stretch and gave the Sox some innings when they needed it because they didn't have the guys there to kind of fill it up.
A couple other things I wanted to talk about and let you go. The glut of outfielders the White Sox have, the prospects, Rutherford, Steel Walker, Luis Gonzalez, Basabe, now Mike Rodolfo, who's back playing in games. What do you make of all of those guys? And is there anyone, you know, for my money, I thought Mike Rodolfo was the best. He has the best bat, the best arm. He's not as fast as some of those other guys, but, you know, that's fine, whatever. But for my money, before he got hurt again this year, he was my pick to play right field. Now, with him starting over, so to speak, I mean, what are your thoughts on who do you think might emerge next season as a favorite to kind of, you know, obviously, hopefully they address right field in free agency, but who do you think can kind of take that leap and kind of separate themselves from the other guys?
Well, even before, you know, they went through this rebuild, I remember, you know, Kenny Williams and Nick Capra and, God, I guess it was Doug Lauman even at that point, talking about, you know, the young guys are there to either help your team from within, you know, promoting them and, you know, starting for your team, or to be part of a trade and bring back guys that you need. You know, that's kind of the purpose. And now the Sox have better young talent, even guys who you talked about who probably across the board didn't have the years they were kind of hoping for this year. But again, as Rick pointed out in his, you know, end of season press conference, one of his favorite lines, development's not linear. And, you know, he said the depth is probably the last thing that's really going to come in this whole rebuild. And I think, you know, some of these guys are going to end up getting traded. It's just, you know, using basic math for that. Unless the Sox petition to, you know, use a five-man outfield, you're not going to have room for all these guys. And you know this, but when you have, you know, you go to your fourth and fifth outfielder guys, you know, they're usually some guys like Eliury Garcia who can play a bunch of different positions, or an Adam Engel who's mainly there just for his glove. You know, the fourth or fifth guys usually aren't the guys who are playing every day anyways. Although, you know, Leary had a good, really good season overall, and Engel, you know, had a good finish when he came back up. But yeah, I think Adolfo still is a guy. I had a chance to see Adolfo in his first instructs back when he was kind of in awe of everything after he had, like, just spent the season with Bristol, when they still had Bristol, just because he was too young to even play at that point when they had signed him. He was really kind of their first big international market get, I guess. And I've always said, just talking to this young man, he will be a star in this city. I think the same for Jake Berger, you know, assuming he gets back on track from, you know, the really bad run of injuries he's had. Just his personality and the way he carries himself, I think if he gets healthy and gets to the level he should, he'll be a star in this city. And I still think he's the best of that group just by, you know, what he brings. And it's amazing to see what he's gone from, you know, like the kid who I saw whatever years ago was when he was signing autographs and couldn't believe that a couple fans were asking him and knew who he was for autographs, to now he looks like a linebacker for the Bears. You know, I mean, he's put on that much muscle, and I still think he's got the best skill set of that group. But I think, you know, any one of those guys you mentioned could step up and be a guy who could be counted on at some point in the future. And that's good, like I said, in two different ways. One that can help you, and one that might entice another team who might say, hey, you know, we really like player X. And Well, I don't think the Sox are totally ready to start moving these guys at this point, maybe more in the 2020 offseason. I think if there's something that comes along that makes a lot of sense, you know, Rick and Kenny are going to make that move. So I would agree with you, and I would say, to make a long answer short, I would say Adolfo out of that group. But I think, there's a lot of guys in that group who have talent who could take that next step up.
Maybe even a trade deadline next year, depending on where they're
exactly.
at as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point by you, that we all focus on what's going on now, right? You know, it's like now everyone's focused on the playoffs and then, you know, the moves that come out, and then it'll be the winter meetings, then it'll be, you know, what can get done before spring training, and then the trade deadline. But all these are fair ground, as you point out. I mean, just because you don't make a move, you don't make the exact move you want in the offseason, doesn't mean you can't add on, you know, before spring training, or can't add on at the trade deadline, too. So you're right. There's all sorts of different stops for these kind of moves to happen along the way.
One more position player question. I'm going to finish it out with a pitching question. Two left-handed bats in the system. You know, Zach Collins finished the season with the Sox. Interesting. He got called the first time. Didn't do so hot. Got sent back down, changed a few things. Lit AAA on fire, and he finished the season, you know, on a high note, in my opinion, with the Sox. And Zach Collins and then Gavin Sheets, who didn't start off as well, but a guy that, you know, last year, again, that I saw plenty of, and you could just see that the kid can hit. And then he finally turned it on around June, and he had a fairly decent year. I mean, he led the Southern League in RBIs, I believe. Don't quote me on that for sure, but I know he was at the top right around there. But two left-handed bats that the White Sox system, you know, left-handed bats are tough to come by at any position. But for Sheets and Collins, we'll start with Collins. But what did you make of Collins' season this year, and what do you think his path moving forward?
Yeah, I think Collins is more, you know, the guy more in play, obviously, right away.
Right, right.
And Gavin Sheets, by the way, 83 RBI, second in the minor league system behind Luis Robert, and just ahead of, I think, everyone's favorite non-September call, your man Mercedes.
Yes.
He finished with 80 down there. But, yeah, I think Collins is a really interesting case because he is a first-round pick, 2016. We had to do a five-questions thing at the end of the year. And one of my questions going into this offseason, which I think is valid, is, you know, how does he fit? Because it does influence, I think, a little bit on what you're doing, right? I mean, if you do pursue Grandal, assuming that either he opts out or the Brewers opt out, and I would guess he opts out of his interview. If you have Grandal opt out, then you have McCann, Grandal, and Collins. Now, granted, you have the 26-man roster next year, so that makes a little bit of a difference. But I guess it's not a bad thing to have two, you know, and this is assuming they even get Grandal. This is a completely hypothetical scenario. I still think Milwaukee is going to make a big push to keep him, but that's another podcast for another time, right? But I like what I saw from Collins. I like what you hear from Collins. I think he definitely does need to improve behind the plate. There's no question about it. But again, we're not talking about a 10-year veteran improving behind the plate. We're talking about a guy who's had, what, a quarter of a season in the majors behind the plate and is learning. He's learned a lot from James McCann, who was, you know, a godsend for them really this year. Might be a little bit of a strong term, but, you know, a revelation in terms of not only what he did on the field, but what he did with the pitchers and the young catchers. And, you know, the Sox believe that Collins needed to have those struggles the first time around to kind of make the changes to succeed. And he was better the second time around offensively. I think he still has work to do, you know, defensively and kind of, you know, handling just the whole staff. But it's something that he's going to work on in the offseason and something he's going to learn. And I think as we sit here right now, even if they make moves along those lines, Zach Collins is a guy who's in the picture for 2020 at some level, whether it's ends up being just Zach and McCann behind the plate and Zach, you know, playing some first base and DHing, or whether it ends up being more than those two guys in the picture. It'll be, you know, I think he'll be there as someone to contribute next year. And, you know, Sheets had a breakout year. We were talking, you know, he had 83 RBIs, just second in the system. And, you know, 99 strikeouts, 54 walks, a good plate presence too. And I think he's still learning. So he's another one that, you know, he's one of those guys that maybe you look at and say, which you see in every kind of rebuild or every kind of team developing, where you say, you know, he could be something, but maybe not right now. And then could be the guy who comes up 2 years from now and you're like, geez, you know, thankfully we kept Gavin Sheets because, you know, as the Sox, because look what he's doing now for us over there at first base. You know, maybe he's a guy that after Jose Abreu's contract is done, takes over there. So again, another one of these guys in the system who may not be featured at this point, but could do something for the White Sox at some point.
We could sit here and talk for hours, but we're not going to do that.
Sure.
So a couple pitchers, I'm just going to name a couple guys. So I don't, people listening be like, oh, why didn't you bring these guys up? You guys don't know anything. Jonathan Stever, I mean, out of nowhere, basically. Not technically out of nowhere, but, you know, in terms of who was on the radar at the start of the year to who's on the radar now, Jonathan Stever maybe had the best year out of anyone not named Luis Robert and Nick Madrigal, it seemed like. I mean, he was sensational, you know, and now he's a name to keep an eye on. Another guy I'm really high on is Cade McClure, who battled injuries. I saw him in Kannapolis at the beginning of last year quite a bit, or a few times, and I just could see that this kid has it. And now, he kind of saw him in Winston-Salem doing some good things there before he was shut down because of innings. And Will Kincannon, another guy. But the guy I wanted to talk about was Tyler Johnson, a guy who I think, same thing, saw him in Kannapolis last year and then in Winston, a guy that I think can help this White Sox bullpen as early as this upcoming season.
Yeah, I think Tyler Johnson is a guy who's projected, you know, to be in I don't know if he's going to be with them out of camp, but I think he's a guy who could definitely be part of the relief corps next year. You know, he had some injuries this year that slowed him a little bit, but yeah, there's no question about it that he's someone who I think is on the map for the bullpen in 2020. And, you know, some of the other guys you mentioned are interesting, interesting case too. I really like Will Kincannon. You know, he's someone that a couple of people in the Sox have talked to me about, and kind of a cool personality on Twitter too, which again, doesn't really influence people coming up, but I think is, you know, connected kind of to the city. And of course, everyone knew Cade McClure before he became up, you know, before they could tell what he could do as a pitcher, as, you know, a good friend of Mitch Trubisky's. Right. And, you know, so he's, but again, I think all these guys are, you know, in the picture, as you said, but I do think Tyler Johnson is the furthest advanced out of that group to the point of could be a young guy who, you know, supplements the bullpen. And, you know, when you think about that bullpen, you know, assuming they keep everyone, and, you know, they could make moves. You know, I mean, Colomay was great this year, but you also have a guy like Bummer down there who could probably step into that role. And, you know, let's say they move him, and, you know, at some point, you still have some bullpen depth down there. I mean, going into this season, you figure you already have, I mean, I know I'm going to forget someone. You already have Colomay, Bummer, Marshall, and Jimmy Cordero. Jace Fry, right, is in that picture too. So there's a lot of guys there already. But it also, with some young guys coming up, it gives you a little leeway to maybe, you know, make a move or two out of that bullpen and try and, you know, add on somewhere else.
All right, so that's it with Scott Merkin. We recorded this back on October 2nd, so 2 weeks ago, and finally getting this out there for everyone to hear. Hope you all enjoyed it. Be sure to check out our other podcasts we've got coming up. We're going to do, like I did last year, we're going to do off-season interviews with all the players and see how their seasons went, see what they're looking forward to. And we got some big news coming up with Future Sox as well over the next month or so. The playoffs winding down, or the ALCS and the Nationals already punched their ticket to the World Series. So not too long before the offseason begins. Once again, thanks to Scott Merkin for taking his time. I'm your host, Clinton Cole, saying thanks for listening. And be sure to check out some more offseason Future Sox podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @Future Sox.